Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Dan Gooding, CEO of Nuformix. NFX is the ticker there, and Dan discusses them achieving their second NXP1 development milestone, which has triggered an additional £500,000 payment for NXP001. Also on the podcast, Andy Hollingworth, Chief Executive Officer of Tuple, T-O-O-P, and Andy talks through their interim results for the 6 months ended the 31st of March. Plus, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about Bushveld Minerals, Savannah Resources, and we also cover off the trade talks in the US and China and commodities like copper, etc. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. Plus, you can also see lots of content there on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk. And in fact, there's a nice video there with Anita, who talks about to a Wood Mackenzie senior analyst about the global energy storage market. There's Zach looking at the stocks. What's he looking at today? He's looking at Europe Metals, Bids, that's Bidstack, Rehobold, Eavesteep, and Toop, and Traders buy up U Group after strong final results. There's lots of stuff, other stuff there as well. Just check it out, voxmarkets.co.uk. And by the way, as always, if you use our app, our Vox Markets app, and it's, of course, it's free to use, but if you get some value from that, see, very little these days is given for free. That app is free, okay? Now, if you get any value from that, please give us a decent review and rating at your store, whatever it is, Apple or Android, and that would be much appreciated. Thanks very much.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Dan Gooding, Chief Executive Officer of Nuformix. NFX is a ticker there. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I know you're not in this country, so and it's a different time zone completely. In China, aren't you, I think?
Yeah, back in Shanghai. I think the last time we spoke, I was in Shanghai, so there's a bit of a theme emerging here.
Yeah, and it's quite relevant. Of course, we'll get into why you're there probably in a bit. But you've triggered an additional £500,000 payment for a preclinical sort of milestone of NXP001. This is not the main data yet. There's more data coming out from this in this half. But I always say this, Dan, it's worth doing. Just give us a brief summary as to what Nuformix is all about, because people see biotech pharmaceutical companies and they see them all the same. They say, oh, okay, is it phase one, phase two, phase three? Lots of costs, lots of risks. But you're not like that, are you? You don't do that kind of model.
We've got a slightly different model, that's right. So we are what's termed a pharmaceutical development company. So that means that we are developing treatments and products up to a point of proof of concept before we look to out-license. So that's our business model, an out-licensing model. But I guess what makes us different slightly is that we look to reuse known drugs, and that can have a vastly different risk profile than what you'd usually associate with the industry.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Exactly, and that's what's a lot different. And so you've got several drugs going on. You've got NXP1, which is your lead drug, NXP2. You've got a cannabinoid of a partnership agreement going on as well, and you've got other drugs as well. But this news today is concerning your lead drug, and like I say, you've triggered an additional £500,000 payment. Now, take us through this. What is this about, this one?
Yeah, sure. So NXP1 is a treatment for chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. This is basically one of the side effects of treatment of chemotherapy. So it's a currently marketed therapy. We are looking at taking our version of this product, into the market globally. we simply, to be able to do that, we need to demonstrate that our product, NXP1, is what's termed as being bioequivalent to the marketed treatment. So that's a relatively low cost, short study. And if we're successful, we create a possibility for companies to enter what is quite a large and unexploited market. It's currently difficult to do that because of the high level of technical difficulty of being able to match this marketed product, and also because of various patents that are in place. We've got a very different approach to being able to deliver this drug using our technology. So that's the program. It's going into chemotherapy, nausea and vomiting. We'd signed an early licensing agreement with our China market partner, New Summit Bio. That's a subsidiary of Yatai Pharma Company. For those that have been following the story, they would know that we're very close to actually getting that clinical data for our bioequivalent study. But the milestones that have been paid to date have been about what are termed preclinical activities, all of the activities towards being able to conduct that first bioequivalent study. And we just got confirmation yesterday from our Chinese partner. They were basically happy with everything that we'd done in the run-up to the study and had therefore triggered that second preclinical milestone.
Yeah. Now, explain what it is, though. I mean, because you say you did this preclinical sort of study because it could support sort of different or opportunities of potential for this drug. So what is that? Do we know what that is or what?
Well, often the way that the drug industry considers the reuse of known drugs, they call it reprofiling. And there are a variety of different applications for this drug potentially and unmet needs as things stand. And we have been exploring the possibility of taking the product forward into that area. Mm-hmm. However, this milestone was also about making sure that the products that we were taking into the clinical study, that, you know, we were really comfortable that they had a high likelihood of achieving the desired kind of clinical result. So that's what this activity was about, making sure the products that we were taking into the study were very likely to deliver what was being hoped for them.
Yeah, okay. And NXP1, the clinical study is still on track for results H1. And it's worth explaining, isn't it? Again, this is not a high-risk sort of test, is it? I mean, it's bioavailability. Can you explain what that means for people that don't know what it means?
Yeah, of course. So in the kind of clinical trials that people do, companies in the space do, in phase two or phase three, they're looking at studies in patients, and you're looking at, you know, whether the drug has a clinical effect on the underlying condition or not. This isn't one of those kinds of studies. It's a study where you basically take, you know, I guess 12 healthy volunteers. You look at the time course of a drug in the patient's in the volunteer's plasma. So over 24 hours, you will look at the concentration change of the drug in the blood over that time period. And then you'll simply compare it with, in our case, our co-crystal-based version of the product, and just check that broadly, the two, I guess, different products perform roughly the same. Yeah. And if you're able to do that, that's termed as being bioequivalent, and that paves the way really for then being able to perform market authorizing studies around the world to be able to begin to get the drug approved in various geographies.
Yeah, and I said, and this bit of data here, I have to say, it's a multiple value trigger, isn't it? Where the main clinical data, because it sort of validates what you're doing and opens up the market to the rest of the world who negotiate agreements there. So it really sets, you know, like I said, will trigger a lot of value, won't it, really?
No, it will do. I think, you know, it's worth pointing out, so we should have covered this, but because the drug is already marketed, we don't have any concerns about safety. And I think that's true for anything that we work on. So, the kind of study outcome that we're looking here, you know, we're not going to have a safety issue. All of our, as I said in our announcement, I think today, all of our patients have been discharged successfully some weeks ago without problems. The study is finished, and we're hoping to share that data very, very soon.
Yeah. And as far as when you say, let's say that the data is successful, and they start to market it in China, you have royalty payments there as well, don't you, in China?
We do, yeah. I think that's a common feature of any sort of out-licensing deal. We'll be obviously, I'm out here working with our partner now, actually looking at our routes to market and how we can make sure that that happens as fast as possible. But like you say, you know, it is exactly, as you said, incredibly, you know, validating for us, validating our science, validating our decision making on what drugs to apply our science to, and validating that, you know, we can do deals that bring in substantial revenue. And we'll look to be doing more of that with NXP1 once we've got the data in hand.
Mm-hmm. More so. So, as a, you know, on a personal level, Dan, at this you know, at this juncture here, are you quite happy with the way things are panning out?
I'm starting to be, yeah, absolutely starting to be. I think you know, the Ebers deal, for example, that we announced was an example of you know, how we can apply our science to really meaningful and commercially exciting things. And I, you know, I hope that we're able to announce some more things like that. And I think it gives an indication of the kinds of things that the company's are capable of. I think when we first came to market, we had some very defined goals. We had, you know, fixed lead programs in terms of, you know, what we were looking to do. And we're getting to the end point of some of that now, particularly with NXP1, where, you know, we're just about to announce our clinical data. So now we've just, you know, got to some of those main inflection points, having, you know, survived that first period on the market, and people can start to see some of the ways in which we're building our portfolio. That seems to be, you know, being met well within the market. So yeah, that absolutely makes me a lot happier than where we've been in the past.
Yeah, I can see you're a cautious man. That's quite good, I think, you know. So but just underline that Ebers deal, so it's about cannabinoid, and it's licensing commercialization up to $51 million up front. That's up to that, and then R&D milestone payments, and then plus long-term royalties of 20% net of sales, isn't it? So that's
a
big,
right,
big lot of potential there, isn't it?
There is, and I think it's just a, you know, it's a very exciting sort of field to be in. The cannabinoids are capable of doing all kinds of things, both in a kind of your classic sort of pharmaceutical setting, as GW Pharma have shown, but also in kind of, you know, really exciting consumer products in terms of, you know, things like alternative medicine. So, you know, we've got a lot of options there in terms of the kind of products that we can see our technology go into. Very quickly, it could potentially go into consumer products, but also over time, it could go into some of the higher value GW Pharma type of products that are cannabinoid based. So, yeah, it's a very exciting place to be.
Yeah, and we'll see news about that in this year. For example, I know it's
yes.
It's
oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so we're just you know, we've only relatively recently signed the agreement. It's a month away, I think, since we announced that transaction. So we're just sort of going through the gears initially with some of the research that we've been performing, and absolutely we'll keep the market informed as we make progress and hit some of those early milestones.
Marvellous stuff. Well, I'm going to ask you for three reasons now, Dan, of course, and if people haven't listened to the podcast before, what I do is on daily podcast, I highlight top five companies that are the most followed for that day, and you do this by hitting the follow button. So if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Absolutely. Well, I think reason number one, probably because we discussed, we're close to a really key inflection point for the business. I think if we are able to achieve this outcome for a study, it's a really strong indication of you know, what the company is capable of going forward. The second reason then would be following on from that in terms of the really diverse sort of portfolio of other molecules that become validated as a result of being successful in our first study, which, you know, we really hope to be. And lastly, I think it'd probably be, as we've just discussed, the Ebers deal, which is going to be a very exciting story to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Dan, good to chat to you. And like I say, you're getting busy this year. So, and news not far away. So no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. We look forward to speaking to you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, Chief Executive Officer of Tuple. That's T-O-O-P. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you've had your interim results for the 6 months ended the 31st of March 2019, and I can see some double-digit percentage increases across the board there, and we'll get into the figures. Before we do, if someone's listening to this for the first time or have never heard of the business Tuple, just summarise what you're all about, Andy, if you could.
Yeah, Tuple probably one of the fastest growing B2B telecoms players in the small business market now. We specialise in delivering fixed price telecoms, prices that never change for the duration of the contract, to UK only small businesses. And that's typically businesses that have less than 50 employees and businesses that literally want to buy from a transparency point of view, simplistically from a billing point of view. And what are they buying from us? They're buying from us connectivity into their premise, connectivity when they are mobile, and connectivity via the latest cloud-based telephony. So all things like broadband connectivity, Ethernet connectivity, mobile connectivity, and cloud-based office telephony that they can take with them on the move.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go through some of the highlights of the figures, if you could. Talk us through them, if you could, Andy.
I think we're really, really pleased with a great, solid set of results, both from a financial and operational point of view. We've exceeded, or at least performed, in line with all of our KPIs. Mm-hmm. Look at the top line. Group revenue grew by an impressive 57%. And if you look at revenue growth for our direct small business, which is our key core focus, that revenue line grew by 169%, which justifies the investment decisions we've made in the digital marketing. And then if you then pick off all of our key propositions, so our business connectivity broadband, that grew by 159%. Our mobile revenue grew by 124%. And our cloud-based telephony revenue grew by 82%. All that is underpinned by a significant material growth in our revenue-generating units, and that led to a gross profit increase of 150%. It's also worth saying that over the same period as well, gross margins also improved by 7 percentage points compared to the same period last year. So given the strategic investments we've made, you can see the drive to future profitability.
Yeah, and you're talking about margins there. And is this one of the reasons why the wholesale revenue's gone down? Take us through why that's gone down.
Yeah, that's not something at all to be concerned of. It's an intended result of our strategy to move away from some of the onerous legacy contracts that we inherited prior to market entry, prior to the IPO of Tuple. They were typically delivering very, very low margins, and that brings with it a high debtor risk. So we've always said clearly we've got a strategy at the end of those contracts to exit from those agreements. And our strategy going forward is to be extremely selective about the agreements that we enter into, and they've got to deliver the right gross margins. So nothing to be concerned about at all. Part of our strategic move to create a great profitable business that drives towards profitability.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so it's been very impressive across the board there. You know, revenue's up massively. Take us through your loss before taxation has gone up slightly. Why is that? If you're heading in the right direction, can you explain, if someone's saying, why has the loss gone up? Why has the loss increased? Can you explain that?
Yeah, the bottom line on the loss is that the loss is exactly where we expected it to be, given the investment we have made. Mm-hmm. Clearly, with the results that I've just taken you through, you can see that the growth strategy is working. And obviously, every single customer that we bring on board is contracted for typically a 2-year period to provide great annuity revenue at the right gross margin. Therefore, there will be a future inflection point where gross margins and gross profit meet the overheads of the business. Yeah. And I think we're demonstrating that by the headline number. Gross profit in the period increased by 150%. So nothing to be concerned about, and exactly in line with where we expected it to be.
Yeah. And take us through, you raised cash last year. How's the cash looking at the moment?
Yeah, cash position as of March the 31st was a very healthy 1.15 million. And the board believes that that current cash position is sufficient to continue with the growth story and pursue the marketing strategy that we outlined at the time of that placing back in September 2018. I think it's really important to say, though, that cash is spent always very wisely and only to accelerate the sign-up of new customers who provide that sort of fixed-term revenue over the life of their contract. A significant increase in the lead conversions and the sales is being achieved. Ultimately, that leads to a lower cost of acquisition per customer. And we are quite excited, actually, about identifying further opportunities within our marketing and our sales strategy to actually to provide further growth, but without the need to expend more money on marketing.
Okay, interesting. Take us through, Andy, the telecoms, you know, industry as a whole. What's happening there? Is there anything going on there? What's exciting there?
Yeah, I mean, the telecoms industry has always been a great consolidation segment. You can see specifically from the recent potential acquisition of KCOM, that valuation at over $500 million is very, very strong. For a company that has, my last checking on the analysis was they had about a 5% share of the small business market, obviously exactly the same identical market to what Tupel is addressing. And I think that over time, we will have a role to play in that consolidation in M&A activity.
Yeah. I noticed that you got there, you mentioned that a major tier one UK carrier has started to benchmark itself against Tupel. What does this mean and why is it significant?
Well, who would have thought that on the basis that 3 years ago, the Tupel brand didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And to now to have the big legacy carrier in the UK market using Tupel as a price comparison when it launches its new propositions. That's probably one of the proudest things that myself, the board and the team have delivered in the last 3 years. It demonstrates that customers don't go to the incumbents. It demonstrates that customers actually find Tupel's policy appealing. And I say their policy, their strategy, in terms of fixed price strategy for the duration of the contract and transparent. And we can sit back and look and say, wow, you know, we're at the table, we're disrupting in the small business market, and it's a really exciting place to be when the legacy carrier in the UK market has got you as their number one comparator.
Yeah. So listen, you've broken lots of monthly records for acquiring customers. What's it like going forward? What's the business like?
Business is trading very, very strong. The future is really bright. If you look at the announcement that we've put out today, we have given some numbers for April, where we received over 900 orders. That's just from our small business market. And that's come from over 600 businesses that joined Tupel for the first time in April. We're now coming up midway point through in May, that business and that growth is sustainable. It's really exciting that over 600 small businesses have come across Tupel, like the Tupel experience, and have placed orders with Tupel. So we're in a very, very strong position. I think there's also significant opportunities, as I've said, with our marketing and our sales automation to drive it even further. But let's not forget, when you're signing up those customers on a monthly basis, you also then get significant opportunity to cross-sell and upsell and add add-ons to those customers as you prove that the Tupel experience is a great experience and you demonstrate and drive their confidence in the Tupel propositions. Mm-hmm. So we continue to make really, really good progress on the road to great growth and the drive towards profitability.
Marvellous stuff. Well, Andy, as always, give us three reasons, if someone's listening right now and not following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Number one, clearly you can see we're a real growth story and we are delivering on our promises. Number two, every single bit of growth that we bring on is guaranteed fixed-term annuity revenue. So it's clear and transparent to see the revenue growth and the gross profit growth. And number three, we're supported, I think, by a great experienced leadership team from the board to the senior leadership team that have considerable experience in the sector and in M&A and organic growth activity.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Andy, good to chat to you. And as always, listen, you've got a lot of news coming out and the business is improving. So no doubt we'll be catching up in the not too distant future.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. How's the news? Because you've got bigger recently, haven't you, John? So are you all settling in well there?
Yes, so we've got a good team in place, very good healthcare pharmaceuticals team, special situations analyst. and we've added to our corporate finance Nomad capacity, so it's all working at the grassroots level.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I speak to Vadim from Healthcare. You know, nice guy, Vadim, and I've had him in the podcast several times. He's quite a regular, but special situation. What's all that about? Talk me through that. What's that about?
Well, that's where we find, you know, unusual specialist companies that we think will do well, and these are. You know, these are exciting companies, things like James Latham, businesses that have good prospects and shall we say have the potential to move the needle.
Okay, maybe we should get somebody on who's specialist in that area, a specialist in special situations. That's a niche that right there. Cool. Okay, Dom. Let's have a quick talk on macro, okay? Because I know, you know, this the whole trade war is not obviously good for China. It's not good for America. It's not good for anyone. But, a net loser out of all this seems to be China. And they've had some bad sort of retail sales growth falls to a 16-year low as trade war goes on. I mean, how is this affecting the commodities, John? I mean, if you look at the EV sort of metals, you know, I call them, say the copper, nickel, and anything else you care to mention, are they taking a bit of a knock because of this or what?
Well, what it does is it damages sentiment. So the people who buy commodities for manufacturers and for other businesses, they tend to take their foot off the pedal. They tend to say, oh well, we think prices will go lower tomorrow, so we won't buy it today. We'll hang on a bit before we stock up again. So everybody suddenly takes a slightly more cautious attitude. Prices come off a little bit, and. But as far as I can see, it doesn't make such a huge impact on demand. What it means is that demand with tariffs going up in the US and in China now, what it means is that it shifts production into new areas. So American factories will ramp up to replace goods that are suddenly much more expensive from China, and a little bit vice versa in China. Certain factories will ramp up over there to replace some of the items that might have come in from America. And it does interrupt global trade, which is never seen as a good thing, particularly by the globalists out there. But it actually eventually it causes companies to grow locally and to restock in those markets. So there is always this short-term negative. But actually, I see it as a sort of longer term gain in many respects. And this might be going against sort of macro thinking within some of the hedge funds. But if you look at economies that have become very isolationist, because, for example, like South Africa during the apartheid years, they actually do grow relatively well within their own spheres.
Yeah. Okay. So, as yet, what is your favorite metal commodity at the moment for, say, next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, say? What do you reckon?
Well, that's always a really difficult question. I mean, I think copper is still right up there at the top of the list. And I'm a big fan of copper because the world is going to need so much of it to meet the demands of the electric vehicle revolution, not just in the cars. I mean, Ivan Glazenberg in a speech reported in the FT yesterday, was reporting that the world will need another 3 million tons of copper a year by 2030, and that's about 15% of global copper supply on an annual basis, just to meet the EV demand, and then I'm not convinced that includes the amount of copper that's going to be needed to bolster capacity within the grid, because I mean, if you imagine that you might buy an electric car and a couple of your neighbours might buy them as well, but you're all fighting over the one charging point in the street, that's simply not going to be good enough. So the grid is going to have to cable up to meet the new demand. Otherwise, we're all going to be fighting over our connections.
Yeah. Do you think sometimes though that tech will cut in halfway through and there'll be alternatives to commodities that we use?
Yeah, there's always new tech ideas, clever ideas. So, but ultimately, the only way to deliver electricity to consumers is through copper or aluminium cables. Aluminium is used for the big overhead grid lines, but copper is always used for the more local stuff. And nobody's come up with a better, more cost-effective, reliable commodity for doing that. So copper is here to stay, and we're going to need more and more of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, copper's a thing. So let's get on to the micro company news. What's happening, John?
Well, I think, look, I mean, so many of these commodities are relevant to the new revolution in energy and electric vehicles. Bushveld had their Q1 numbers out today. They continue to produce vanadium, and I think that, you know, they're ramping up their production with the acquisition of Vanchem. And this is really important for the production of vanadium redox batteries going forwards. And I think vanadium redox is going to be the solution for grid power, because so many of these big lithium grid batteries have been catching fire. There have been 22 fires in South Korea that we know about at different grid installations. And that says to me that either the South Koreans are not very good at producing the batteries, so beware if anyone's bought one, or the lithium grids installations are simply unstable. Whereas we know that we're not aware of any fires at any of the vanadium battery installations. In fact, it would be very difficult for vanadium electrolyte to catch fire, because it's just not flammable. So we think those battery installations will do better. And you need a largish producer like Bushveld Minerals to actually create security of supply for those battery installations going forward. So I think this is a very exciting company, in my view, and I think is going to have a good future.
Yeah, BMN is ticker there. How's their chart looking? All right, yeah. So we've had the rise up. It's still grinding lower a bit. I think maybe that 25 pence, though, maybe, I don't want to speak too early, but maybe that's the recent lower, 24 pence. It touched, which below that, but maybe that's the bottom. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, you never know, but we do see it as fundamentally a good stock. We see there being good ongoing demand for vanadium from the steel industry. There hasn't been so much demand from the battery side of things yet. That's still got to get going. So we do think there'll be strong demand from that to underpin prices going forwards. And vanadium prices have come off in the market. So as China just hasn't complied with its own rules and regulations as much as they should have done. There's always two sides to something, but we do think this is very well placed. And if we move on to lithium, mm-hmm. It's also worth looking at Savannah Resources.
Yeah.
And Savannah came out with a stonking great drill hole result today.
Stonking. I haven't heard that word for a long time. Bring it back in. That's good, Dad. Stonking.
And they produced 22 meters of 2% lithium. And that's a really nice result at one of their new prospects, along with a whole bunch of other results that are significantly better grade than what they've reported in the past. And I think they're very well placed in Portugal to be one of the next generation of new European mines that are going to feed these gigafactories that have been planned by Volkswagen and Northvolt and the like. So there is going to be a whole new European Union battery industry and supply chain created over the next few years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's happened to their copper sort of operations as well? Have they given up on those or what?
No, I mean, that's in Oman. Things work a bit slowly in Oman, you know, in these Gulf states. They don't seem to have the same level of urgency as the rest of the world.
That's because they're all stinking rich, John, and they can't be bothered. What gets them out of the bed in the morning? It's like they don't need to be in a crust, do they?
There may be a little bit of that. But, I mean, other things are getting going in Oman. You've got TriStar and then their antimony roaster that we hope will complete its commissioning quite soon. You've got some ferrochrome smelters that have been built there. They're now the largest largest producers of ferrochrome in the world. So there is stuff happening out there, and there is a willingness by the Gulf states to actually create more industry and diversify away from oil and gas.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, they're going to have to, aren't they? You know, in next 5-10 years, oil and gas, you know, will demand will slowly decrease, will it? Surely, but so they'll have to do something. And now is the time. Well, in fact, they can't wind back the clock. They should have been doing it for a long time, I suppose. But because I mean, you see, all the big companies, oil companies, you know, they're all doing that, aren't they? Because I mean, you've got Shell diversifying and BP diversifying as well. So it's about time you think the Middle Eastern states would as well, you know.
Look, I think the world is not over for oil and gas, because as the world grows, it's still going to use more and more energy, and it'll just use it in slightly different ways. And and I'm sure we'll come to a point where some countries are burning oil to produce the electricity for their electric vehicles. But that is the way. It's difficult to get away from carbon fuels, but at least we'll be able to shift the pollution out from the centre of our cities.
Exactly. I don't think we'll reach a base level, I think, of demand always. And like I say, the world is still growing. But I think just next maybe, do they say about 2025, I think they will reach sort of peak oil, I think, or 2023, I think it was, wasn't it? I think, who knows? It's all guesstimates. It's all forecasts. Cool. Anything else, John? Any other companies already seen?
I think that's all for now. But the companies are getting moving, and things are starting to look a lot more interesting out there.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I think what Trump did by raising the tariffs and then Beijing coming back and saying we'll retaliate on the 1st of June, that shook a lot of markets, scared the markets a little bit. And of course, it's part of his game, his play, it's part of his negotiating style. And he didn't think he'd shake the market so much, so he's come back now saying, listen, it's just a little squabble, we'll get a deal done. So I think he's had to calm the markets a bit, hasn't he? He can't come out and just say, listen, it's my negotiating tactic, that's what I do. So I think he will get a deal done, because of course the alternative is not good for anyone, and it's the best route to get a deal done for everyone. So it's going to happen, I think, isn't it?
Yes, a deal is going to be done, but it takes two to tango, and the Chinese have got to adhere to what they say, and they've got to sit down and be sensible about it, because otherwise the Americans are going to give them a hard time, and I think the Chinese really need to get the message.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, some of the figures out coming from China is not good. And like I said, they're having to do more stimulus and really pump the system, pump prime the system. So they're obviously suffering a bit, so they need to do something. I think they will bend in the end. Cool, marvellous stuff, John. Have a nice week, and we'll catch up next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, most followed is Infrastrata, that's INFA. At four, MX Oil, MXO. At three, Integumen, Skin is the ticker there. At two, Edenville Energy, EDL, ticker there. And number one, most liked, or most followed company, I should say, most followed company is Eve Sleep, EVE, ticker Alan Green. Covered them on the podcast yesterday, of course. Another suggestion from Afsal, he's a decent stock picker. Oh, that's so. But of course, it's like anything. Do your own research first. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it is Nuformix. They achieved, of course, Dr. Dan, a second NXP1 development milestone. At four, it's Alba Minerals, maiden mineral resource estimate for TBS project. At three, it's a joint three, Mahenge Liandu project DFS update. That's Armadale Capital. At two, it's Tuple interim results. And Tuple's the same as Mahenge. It's Tuple sort of Europe Metals as well. It's Holdings. That's EUZ. And the number one most liked RNS came from Talao Energy Public Procurement and Asset Disposal Board Decision. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.